but as a business advisor, the name of the game between now and going into the 2030s is market share. Gain market share.
You're listening to the Elevate Podcast, and I'm your host, Robert Glazer. Join me as I talk to world-class performers about how they build their capacity and reach greater heights in leadership, business, and life, and how you can do the same. Welcome to the Elevate Podcast. Our quote for today is from Warren Buffett: "Do not save what is left after spending, instead spend what is left after saving." My guest today, Brian Bulio, is the CEO of ITR Economics and is an esteemed economist with over 40 years of experience in business cycles and trend analysis. Brian has a track record of 96% accuracy in economic forecasts and is the author of popular books including Prosperity in the Age of Decline and Make Your Move. He's provided insightful workshops and seminars to thousands of executives and organizations around the world, and he and his work have been featured in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Times, CNBC, Fox Business TV, and numerous other media outlets. Brian is also a regular columnist and contributing economist to national trade associations and publications globally. Brian, welcome to the Elevate Podcast.
Thanks, Robert. Thank you very much. Glad to be here, really.
So I'm always curious of sort of the beginnings. Tell me about your early life. What were there signs that you'd become an economist as a child?
No child wants to grow up to become an economist. You know, when I was a child, I was going to be an astronaut or something. I was not an economist. I got interested in business in grade school, high school. But, you know, business and economics are two different disciplines. It was only when I got to college, my freshman year, did I get introduced to economics, and I just fell head over heels in love with it. I was an accounting major, of all things, Robert, and I quickly learned accounting is, I know there are dynamic aspects to it. I get that. People groove to it. But for me, it was very static, whereas this thing called economics was constant motion, and it helped explain what was going to go on with businesses and what was driving those businesses, and I found that utterly fascinating. It helped that I had a great professor, Dr. Alan McCausland, but I was hooked from that point on. So I'd left accounting behind and went into economics.
And you worked in the Department of Labor at one point, right?
I did, as an economist on the Consumer Price Index. The healthcare component was my bailiwick back in the day.
And what were some of the takeaways that you took kind of to your private sector work from kind of working in the government and behind the scenes on that?
Well, I was only in the private sector for about 9 months before I went to work for the government. It was right out of college. So I didn't have a lot of private sector experience to take with me. What I learned from the government, though, is there are a lot of stellar people working there, at least in where I was working, that care deeply about getting it right, getting the numbers right. Process was everything. And the material generally was really embargoed until that actual release date. Very few people would know the final number before the final number came out. So the integrity was quite high also. I was there for 3 years and one day. The one day ensures your reemployment rights as a federal employee. So I was there for 3 years and one day and then went back into the private sector. And at that time, I went to the Institute for Trend Research because that's what we were known as back then.
So now that has sort of developed into ITR Economics. So tell us a little bit about what does your organization do?
The real short answer is we provide accurate business intelligence to businesses so that they can make profitable, rational decisions about the future. How we do that is consulting. We consult with companies about their own trends, what's going on. We give speeches all over various and sundry countries, flying around doing that. Not me personally doing all this talking. We have a team. And then we have subscription services also. So there's three different ways that we reach out to people. Our mission, and it sounds kind of corny, I guess, but my mission has always been from the time I bought the Institute in 1987, two things. I was going to make capitalism work better. People stop making stupid mistakes and capitalism.
The same stupid mistakes, yeah.
Yeah. And at the same time, make a difference in this world like every young entrepreneur wants to do, right? But those have been my two mission drivers for the last 40 years, Robert, and it's been a great run.
Yeah, and as I was mentioning before the call, I mean, you spoke to a group of CEOs as part of a program I was part of called EMP a few years ago, and I just one of those speakers who kind of resonated with me, and I think I'm seeing some of the things that you talked about happening. We'll get more into kind of this super cycle development, but it really stuck with me and the data you showed behind that. A couple of things leading up to it. There's a lot of criticism of economists that they're better at analyzing the past than predicting the future. And we see all kinds of, I think Nassim Taleb, I've read his books and he's pretty funny. You know, he goes to these things and these people make these bold proclamations for next year. And he's like, well, show me your last 5 years. You tell this. So economists seem to be better at analyzing the past than predicting the future. However, your group has this really high accuracy rate and what you've been doing for a while. And I know you've also heard the quote, history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. So mm-hmm. I'm guessing that aligns to your philosophy. So tell me a little bit about like what you do sort of differently. And then like looking at history, what is rhyming now versus repeating?
Okay. What we do differently in a major way is before every engagement, we present our report card. This is how we did forecasting 2022 is what we're showing people right now. 8 headline items that never change. And it's on our website going back years and years so people can look it up. And we show the good and the bad. Robert, for 2022, I messed up the single family housing starts forecast. We came in with only an 85.8% accuracy rating, which is not good enough by a long shot. So I own that. I explain what I got wrong, and you know, all the 98s and 99s are there, but it's important for people to see that it can go wrong and you have to have some contingency planning involved there. Beyond that, what we do differently, and you're very apt to bring up the rhyming rather than repeating itself. Our founder, Chapin Hoskins, would never hire an economist who wasn't also a musician because the economy—
Are there a lot of those?
Yeah, there are. We hire
Interesting.
Them. Because there's such a confluence of factors and variables and influences that if you listen to just percussions, you're going to miss out on what the woodwinds are doing over here. And the woodwinds are going to have an influence on this composition called the economy. So we're always weighing all these different variables and to what extent we've seen them in the past in this same paradigm. How has that played out? But it's never the same, right? I mean, there are always different trends going on. And at that point, we get into our theories about, well, what does that mean this time? How is the fact that savings adjusted for inflation today are coming down? How is that going to impact what we see going on in the future? Because we haven't seen this savings trend like this since 2000, 2001, and it was much milder back then. Because now we're living in this post-COVID paradigm where, you know, we're still feeling the ramifications of the government's reaction to COVID. Here in 23, we're going to feel it's more in 24. We're going to feel it's more in 25. This thing has a very long tail associated with it, which is obviously brand new. You know, again, it goes with the rhyming. We did really well forecasting in 21 and 20 and 21 and 22. And people were, you know, kind of, how'd you do that? And it's the rhyming. We looked at natural disasters that have occurred here in the U.S., Japan, Europe. How did the economies behave? What were the reactions? What happened? What transpired? And then we looked at COVID and we said, all right, this is a global natural disaster. So we expect natural disaster type results for the economy and for governments, et cetera. And that's what happened. We didn't take the paradigm that this is something we've never seen before since 2016, anyways, with the Spanish flu. You just need to understand how to amplify these events or scale them back for that matter. But it goes back to this, and I don't know if you're a believer in this or not. People haven't changed in forever. People react to the same.
Well, this is Ray Dalio's whole, his whole investing philosophy. I heard you speak. You also, I think it was 2018, and I had just maybe paid off something. And I think you told our group, borrow as much money as you can at 2.5% or whatever it was at the time. And like borrow until people won't let you do it anymore. That would have been good advice. Cause I think these were actually the years you predicted the inflation to start to pick up. I mean, I was part of a different group that had our economists speak you know, when everyone was locked at home during 20 other in 21, and he had all these charts that be ready for the greatest stock market prosperity in the next, and all of this stuff, because, you know, never been anyone with this much M1 or M2 or money pumped into the economy, all this, completely ignored the, in retrospect, the inflation piece of that equation and how the Fed would react to it. You know, he was like, this is going to be the greatest economic expansion in the history of the world because, and I would have lost my shirt, but I realized he never talked about inflation. It was interesting.
Yeah. He was like, and as people do that, not just economists, they will tend to straight line extrapolate whatever is going on right now in front of them.
And every company who did that in 2021 fell in hard times in 2022.
Oh, you mean Peloton may have done that?
Right. There are a lot, right, who acted like that was going to continue the rest of the world.
Yeah. It's kind of insanity.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? 2 years ago, I bought a dual suspension mountain bike for the first time, and it pushed me to ride trails that I had never been willing to try before. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has exceptional capability that will have you seeing the possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. The Lexus GX comes with available dynamic sky panorama glass roof, available front row massaging seats, best-in-class towing capacity, available 33-inch all-terrain tires, and available multi-terrain select. I've seen the new Lexus GX popping up all around my town, and not only does it have the capabilities to take you to new places on and off the road, but it's a great-looking car. The new Lexus GX is ready to raise the bar for you. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and free. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. It helps you identify and hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. Case in point, last year I asked the CEO of a major ski resort how he got his job, and he told me that he saw it on LinkedIn and decided to apply. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. The team at LinkedIn is also constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process easier and quicker. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/practical. That's linkedin.com/practical to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
So going back, if I remember, you were talking about the super cycles in 20, it was probably 18 or 19, and that they looked alike. And we were, you know, this next 10 years, that we had been plugging the dam, but eventually the dam was going to break. You know, there was going to be inflation. And I think by 2030, the whole thing was going to fall down on itself. Is that still sort of your general prediction?
Yeah, it is. Alan and I, my brother, who's in the business with me, we have a webinar coming up on July 27th. And that's the whole topic is, what are we still seeing for the 2030s? And we had to ask ourselves, because of COVID and all that deficit spending, should we bring that timeline in? Because you may or may not recall, our national debt, the size of our national debt was anticipated to be a major problem. And that just really ballooned during COVID. So we were getting asked that question a lot. And the answer we came back with is, no, we don't have to change the timeline because that's only one factor amongst five. And what we realized, it isn't the size of the national debt that matters, Robert. It's when people lose faith in the U.S. government's desire or ability to pay back that debt.
That was a very recent phenomenon.
Yeah. You know, we passed a tipping point in April 2009. In April 2009, the United States, of its own free volition, allowed its national debt to exceed 80% of nominal GDP. 800 years of financial history shows you that when a country has gone that far, it has crossed a tipping point from which it is exceptionally difficult to recover, particularly the more you go beyond 80%. Now we're running at 120%. There's only one country that I have found in modern times, and this was post-World War II era, as a matter of fact, Sweden went to about 82% and then clawed its way back down to sanity because they passed a constitutional amendment demanding a balanced budget over the course of a business cycle. And I like to remind people, what do you think the odds are of any congressman, president saying, oh yeah, we're going to balance the budget? It's not going to happen. We are politically agnostic at ITR because I find Republicans and Democrats both want to engage in fairly ruinous behavior for their own political ends.
Re-election.
It's the name of the game.
So if you're advising sort of business leaders or economic leaders, like where are we in this cycle? I don't think people, it seems we're in this game of chicken, right? So most of the things that people consider assets in the world is debt that probably if it all had to be repaid, it couldn't. But as long as everyone pretends it can be repaid, then we continue to go on. But I think your point was like, at some point you can keep plugging the dam and the Fed can jump in and do this stuff. But the only way to really fix it is for it to wipe out, kind of like we had, you know, in the Great Depression. Is that still the track, or how would you advise a business owner or a business leader of what this next decade is going to look like? What is the sort of super cycle prediction? And what does it look like historically?
For the next 8 years, 7 to 8 years, social turmoil is going to characterize not only our society, but other societies. There's a tremendous, this is the age of social unrest, according to the economic super cycle, as you have dubbed it.
And it's happened before, right? This is mimics previous periods.
In that respect, it has. But there's a new element this time, and that is the negative demographic that is China. You have the world's second largest economy losing people every year. Less and less people. Fewer and fewer workers, fewer and fewer consumers. Japan's been in that mode since about the mid-1990s. And most people don't really understand about Japan. Japan used to be the world's second largest economy. Now they're a distant third. The standard of living in Japan has been flat at best for the last 20 years. When your population is in decline, you are a foobard. Okay. It is in decline.
You don't know what that means. Look it up.
Fouled up beyond all recognition. China's
populations are declining in a lot of countries in the world.
Yes. Yeah. But you know where they're not? United States, Canada, Mexico, and for the next 30 years, likely India. India's more on the bubble.
And India is self-generated, but immigration drives a lot of the growth in those other countries, right?
Yeah. We need to procreate faster here in the United States. And you look like you're young enough to be part of the people I tell.
I'm done. I have three. I've done my job.
Oh, three's good. Yeah. Okay, three's, but you're intelligent, so why not go for four? Anyways. Russia, negative demographic. It's going to become even more hollowed out. India has now, population-wise, eclipsed China. And with China's negative demographic, and they're becoming increasingly command-control communist, over the next 10 years, you're going to see the ascendancy of India while China declines into more and more military importance, but less and less economic importance. And that's going to be very interesting. To watch. There's three things you need to have if you're going to be an economy that prospers long-term. One, you have to have positive demographics. And as you said, lots of places don't have that. Two, you have to be rich in natural resources because of the inflation we're going to be going through. And the United States has been very mightily blessed with natural resources, as has Canada, and Mexico is reasonable. China has a relative paucity of natural resources. And the third thing history is very, very clear on, if you want to be a global dominant power, you must have the rule of law. It must be an independent judiciary. You must have intellectual property rights and private property rights. And you must have bankruptcy laws so that if you fail, you can get back on your feet and move forward. And North America is where you're going to find those things in abundance, good luck finding it anyplace else. So while this super cycle is upon us and our debt is going to be a precipitating factor, or at least a causal factor, China's demographics are going to be a causal factor also. And if you look in the post-2036 period, the fact that we have millennials and Gen Z means we are going to vastly outperform our industrial competition. No one's going to be able to hold a candle to us.
I've been reading, and I don't know the cause of it, but 25% of China's youth is unemployed. Like they just, I think they geared everyone towards white collar jobs, and they need more blue collar workers. Is that right?
Just like us, they do.
Yeah.
And also, though, we're seeing the labor participation rate in China plummet, and it's a cultural shift in people's thinking. In this country, there's a very nice relationship between labor participation rates falling in those people 16 to 24 year olds and the advent of college loans. People stopped working their way through college. They took out loans instead of working. It's like they cross very, very neatly.
So we're going to fare well, or everyone's in trouble?
We're going to be in a lot of trouble. We have our economy going down 6 years before we bottom out. It is going to be very painful for those who are not prepared. But
doing 6 years of GDP decline.
Yeah.
And when do you think that starts?
Oh, it'll be a Tuesday. I mean, you know, it's kind of far out, right? We have it starting late 29, early 2030.
Got it. So COVID hasn't changed your. No. I was wondering whether the interest rates and so why then? Why that time?
Because it's the nexus of the debt, Social Security insolvency, medical care costs, demographics. You know, we have, like the rest of the world, we're an aging population, right? But we're not aging nearly as rapidly because of the younger generations that I mentioned. Old people, and this gets me into some trouble, old people suck resources out of an economy. We're takers. We're not working anymore. We're not paying taxes unless you're amongst the super rich and you're paying taxes on your Social Security or your other, you know, passive incomes. The government's taking care of our health care. We take a lot more out of the economy than we put back in. That's why.
So when the kids don't replace it, like this is, I mean, I've seen in France, there are all these outrages in this, and the government's like, what do you want us to do? The numbers don't work. You can't,
right.
We don't have
right.
enough people paying in to cover for everyone to retire at 55.
Exactly. Yeah. And yet they're riding over this because, I mean, it's numbers.
The math's not there, right? Even if they wanted to culturally.
Right. In terms of that 6 years of decline, by the way, don't think of it as one straight line. It's not. It's more like that roller coaster or that slide we put our kids on, you know, that's sort of bumpy on the way down. It's just rather relentless that way. And what Alan and I talk about, and thanks for mentioning the book, Prosperity in the Age of Decline, is you can choose to go the decline or you can look for the ways to prosper. There's always ways to make money. In fact, it's easier to make money during bad times than it is during good times. For instance, take real estate. You don't make a profit when you sell your real estate. You determine that the day you bought that real estate, right? Yeah. It's a question of timing and knowing where to invest your money. The stock market is going to do miserable during most of the early 2030s. Well, if that's miserable, what's going to do well? Shift your thinking over to those resources that are going to do well. Because of the global demographics, what is going to be inflation throughout the 2020s and in the early 2030s, we'll switch over to deflation. So interest rates are going to be coming down in a rather precipitous way. If you've locked in a bond at a relatively high coupon rate, even if it's a very conservative bond, say a Swiss government bond, which is what we advocate for, or a Canadian government bond. So as you lock it in at 7%, because it's at the inflation peak. As deflation happens and interest rates come down, what's going to happen to your
principal? It's worth a lot more.
Yeah. Then you're going to sell it and you're going to go back into cash and then you're going to go back into hard assets and you're going to be the next Joseph Kennedy. I mean, it's...
Harvard Business Review provides information, tools, and practical advice on leadership, management, and strategy through the HBR.org website, their print publication, and their podcast. HBR.org is your go-to for leadership and business management articles. A recent favorite is Stop Eliminating Perfectly Good Candidates by Asking Them the Wrong Questions. Then there are other world-famous case studies, which premium subscribers can access as well. HBR produces a number of leading podcasts, from HBR on Leadership to my favorite, the HBR IdeaCast podcast. A subscription to HBR also includes access to videos, The Big Idea, HBR Magazine, and a wide variety of newsletters. While much of the Harvard Business Review content is available for free after signing up at their site, subscriptions to unlimited content start at only $10 a month. Go to www.hbr.org/subscriptions and enter promo code ELEVATE right now to take advantage of this great offer. Again, go to www.hbr.org/subscriptions and enter promo code ELEVATE to learn more about this great opportunity to help manage your career and business.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So I remember you saying, I think it was Canada, Norway, and Australia, or something where you said you have to have population growth, natural resources, and a balanced budget. Those are the countries that you want to invest in their bonds.
It's Canada, Australia, Switzerland, and I now add Sweden in there because of what's been going on in Sweden. Yeah.
And what's are those the criteria?
Yeah. Yeah. You remember well. Good memory.
I did. I don't even take good notes. So I remember the key. I must have made an impression on you. Well, it made sense. So again, if you're a business owner, what does real estate look like in that scenario? I guess all assets, or if that's deflationary, it's not good for hard assets.
Right. It is not. We'll get the question, should I hold on to my real estate going into the 2030s? And the answer is, depends on your age, depends if it's leveraged, if you're carrying it. It depends what state you're in. I mean, my gosh, people in Illinois are going to get creamed during the 30s a lot more than people who live in Texas, who live in Florida. You got to play the demographics all the time. West Virginia is our version of China when it comes to population trends.
Well, and does global warming factor in this now, and where people are going to want to be, where there's not a flood or a drought or any of these things?
Oh, man. Don't you know it's not global warming, it's climate change?
Sorry, climate change, yes. I mean, it feels like now I joke with my friend, I was talking to someone in Europe, I'm like, if you go across the U.S. cities, you can choose between flood or drought or heat wave. Those seem to be your two choices right now.
For now, yeah. But how much of that is climate change? How much of that is that El Nino or El Nino? Yeah. I don't know. I'm not a climatologist. I have friends who are, and they tell me that we're in for some pretty extreme weather, but we've
got insurance companies stopping. I don't think they're going to insure coastal properties in 3 or 5 years, or maybe at premiums that only very few people can pay.
It's really funny. It depends on the caliber of your house. I live in Florida, as I mentioned to you before we came online. And after the last hurricane went through, our homeowner premiums, no change. Hmm. A friend of ours who lives no closer to the water, but on a different part of the island, they wanted to raise his homeowner's insurance $50,000 a year.
Because of the difference in how the house was constructed?
Yeah. Huh.
So you've got concrete and rebar.
And I got a wind mitigated roof that isn't going to go flying off like in The Wizard of Oz. But it makes a difference. But a lot of insurance companies, to your point, are pulling out from the coastal areas. And we have some clients that are in insurance, and they won't touch those coastal areas for that reason. They'll stay right in the heart of America. But even then, the Mississippi River floods, and that's catastrophic. Inflation is an insurance company slayer, probably more than coastal flooding in terms of what it does to their balance sheets.
So if you were a business leader, or business owner, or you were someone overseeing considerable personal assets, like I am a business owner. Or if you're advising, how would you and your like how do you think about these things? Is this something to fear? Is this an opportunity? You said there's always pockets of strength within the weakness, but a 6-year negative GDP is something no one's, I think, seen in their lifetime, that's probably managing anything right now.
Oh, they haven't. And that's going to be the hard part. They just don't have a mental paradigm for what we're talking about. We're already telling our audiences, like, if you think you're going to build wealth over the next 7 years, like you built wealth over the last 30 years with a naive buy-hold strategy, you lose. And if I may give you a case in point.
When you say next 7 years, you mean these 7 years or the 7 years starting?
I mean 2023 to 2030.
Okay, got it.
You lose. I was looking at two of my our daughters and their husband's retirement 401k IRA. And these poor kids, their companies have them invested in mutual funds. And there's a time and a place for mutual funds, right? But one of my kids, $150,000, because they're young, this one, and they haven't spread across 8 different mutual funds. Well, that's stupid. But when I raised that, they said, well, it's going to be worth X number of dollars if you just hold on to it for the next 40 years. And I'm thinking that this person isn't playing with a full deck. And these mutual funds were grossly underperforming the stock market. So the first thing, and by the way, I am a registered investment advisor. One of the first things I tell people is gauge how your portfolio is doing. Make your financial planner show you how has my investment done relative to the stock market. If I'm not even keeping up with the stock market,
right,
then I may as well just sell all that other stuff and buy
an index fund. Yeah.
Yeah. And do better. And don't get married to the index fund either, because there are ways that you want to be able to beat that. We have a program at ITR called the Optimizer that we developed. And it operates on the premise that no one can time the market accurately time and time again. I believe that's just impossible. There's a random walk going on there.
Yeah.
But the name of the game is generally know which sectors of the economy are going to outperform others. And you mentioned our track record, and that's what we do. We look at which sectors of the economy are likely to hold up better than others. Even in the super cycle that you were mentioning, we've identified employment areas, we've identified sectors of the economy that will likely be, relatively speaking, bulletproof during the 2030s. Why are we doing that? Because we want your kids, my grandkids, to go into fields and go into study programs that are going to make them insulated from all that economic turmoil.
And what are one or two of those as an example?
Sure. Not surprisingly, state, local, and federal protection services are relatively immune to this. So if you have a son or a daughter that's a fireman or rides an ambulance or is a police officer, they're going to be just fine. Teachers tend to be just fine in this country because the demographics are going to be fine. So none of these are high-flying incomes, but it's just basic blocking and tackling. Healthcare, nurses, doctors, they're going to be fine through this. The legal profession, accountants tend to be fine.
Who's going to be really not fine?
The guy selling luxury items to people who no longer have all that discretionary income.
So in the U.S., the consumer has just been the driver of the economy. So you're saying that domino is going to fall?
Yep. Fall and fall hard. But then it's over with. By 2036, it's over with. And ask me why. Go ahead. Ask me why 2036.
Why I was going? I mean, how can you not? Why does the misery end in 2036?
We start coming out of it post 2036 because by 2036, the majority of us baby boomers are dead.
Hmm.
So the baton of power has passed to a younger generation. The wealth has passed to a younger generation, and my generation is
and no the liability is gone.
Yeah, exactly. And we're North America alone is going to be able to say that. I mean, Africa can say that, but they're all messed up because they don't have the rule of law, right? If they could ever get the rule of law, they would.
Do you think the rule of law is a little bit at risk here based on some of the things we've seen lately?
I would if I haven't studied history. Study your history, and you know that we're rhyming with periods we've gone through before. Mm. There's a really cool book, if you haven't read it, and I don't get any money if you read this book, called The Triumph of William McKinley. It's a worthwhile book written by Karl Rove, which is going to be a turnoff for some people, but it is still a very well-reasoned, very good book, no matter what your personal feelings are toward Mr. Rove. I was on a panel with him, by the way. The man's exceedingly bright and balanced, although he's not always portrayed that way, but it's worthwhile reading.
And so this the wealth transfer of what's left of it, you're saying is the main... is sort of the main shift.
Now I got to engage in a little bit of a stereotype here. people my age, and for your audience who's listening, I'm 67 years old, we have a tendency to be reluctant to readily adapt or adopt new technologies. Mm-hmm. We're much more, and let alone investing in them, we're more interested in preserving our wealth than betting on new technologies, new ways of doing things. We already know that the millennials thrive in terms of systemic thinking. And they are of the age group where they are willing and able to adopt and adapt these technologies into brand new industries. I don't know if you're familiar with Joseph Schumpeter, a very famous economist who created the phrase, who coined the phrase creative destruction, right? The 2030s is going to be this period of creative destruction. And the younger people are the ones that are going to drive this thing. And we're going to have them driving it, whereas there's a lack of them in any other, every other industrial nation, which is a huge leg up that we have. You know, there's so much chatter right now about AI, Robert. We haven't even begun to think through all the ramifications of AI in a
both positive and negative.
Both. There was a great book written by an economist named Gerhard Mensch called Innovation in a Long Wave. And the long wave is the super cycle. When you have asset destruction, like we're talking about, you know, assets are going to be written off. Capital is freed up when you do that. So that capital starts to look for new places to be invested. And those will be into the green shoots, and they'll give rise to whole new industries that aren't even on our horizon right now. And this is only 15 years away, 13 years away.
What do you think about energy transformation?
Oh, look at that. We're out of time. I think we're going to be on a fossil fuel economy for a lot longer than most people realize. EVs and the electrification of everything would be a lot closer to reality if we had the infrastructure, the grid to pull that off. We do not. Mm-hmm. It sounds great, but we don't have the means to pull it off. We're going to be on fossil fuels for quite some time, hopefully cleaner versions of the fossil fuels, which can be accomplished. But it's, you know, that's an upset.
That's an episode itself. So I just, you know, trying to wrap it up. I know you talk about, okay, so 2030 is sort of the beginning of this cliff, ends in 2036. Rates are probably higher than because of COVID, because of all the money stimulus that people thought right now. But it looks like inflation is coming down due to these high rates. But you don't think you don't think that's a sustainable trend for the next five or 7 years?
Okay. I do not. And the single easiest reason to accept that is this: we have a labor shortage in the United States, and there's no way to solve that labor shortage, and that's going to keep the cost of labor high. And when the cost of labor is sticky on the way down, even during a business cycle downturn, you aren't going to get rid of inflation. It's not going to go back to the way it was. We are stuck at a higher level of inflation.
And so do you think the Fed's going to keep raising rates?
I think they're going to stop here in July. Okay. They may go up one more time because it'll catch back down to their acceptable range if they're halfway intelligent. And by the way, that's debatable. But as soon as the economy starts heating up again in 2025 and 26 and 27, then our labor shortage
rears. So those are going to be growth years, you think, heading into this? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do.
So this is a narrow window to navigate the up, the down, and then the down.
Okay. Yeah, if you're not fleet of foot, you know, if you're a slow decision maker, good luck. This is the time, just like I was saying back in 2018, not to do it with debt now because of these interest rates, but this is a time to be aggressive with one's business. Now, you asked me as on the investment side of things, but as a business advisor, the name of the game between now and going into the 2030s is market share. Gain market share. Do it with new products, go into new geographies, do it by acquisitions. But he or she who's gaining market share going into the 2030s in, again, the right markets, you don't want to be the king of bowling balls going into a depression. Yeah. You win. You'll be fine.
And you win because even you're falling from a high perch?
Well, you're falling a high perch. Yeah. And if you own the market share, you own the pricing.
Better pricing. Okay. So pricing power is going to be very important.
Yes, sir.
The only problem is that people have been chasing market share at the expense of profitability for the last couple of years, and no one seems to want to fund that anymore. So people are going to have to figure out how to do that in a little bit of a different way.
Well, that, and they have to. And the answer to that, by the way, isn't all that difficult. If you really know your competitive advantage, you can protect your margins and gain share at the same time. But you've got to know your real competitive advantage. You mentioned our forecast accuracy. That's our competitive advantage. That's why we tout it all the time. That's our moat that we've created around ourselves. Every company out there has to know what their competitive advantage is. What's the moat that protects them and compels people to go to them? And if you're looking at a company that thinks it's price, they don't get it. So many double-blind market research studies have been conducted that show that price, unless you're in a truly commoditized business.
Or unless you're like a Walmart or an Amazon and you have the massive infrastructure to do that. But it's right. A very few, right? Yeah.
Right. Price matters usually is number three or four. Hmm. And Walmart's great at destroying their suppliers. So I'm not sure that's a great example. But
no, I'm just saying they not how they do it, but they seem to have the scale and the ability to do it. I wouldn't want to try to compete against Walmart on price, right? That wouldn't be a great strategy.
No, it certainly wouldn't. Maybe on safe zones, but not on that.
Right. So stay in the game. So we're going to have quite a bit of a rebound, it sounds like. You do think we're going to come out of this, but we're going to come out hot on the economy and hot on inflation.
Mm-hmm. And push the pedal to the metal till we get into that 2030 period. And before we hit that downside, if you're thinking you want to get out of the game of business, then do so in 28 or 29 while the getting's good.
Sell your business. Yeah.
Sell your business to your kids if they've been rotten kids. I mean, let them take it.
With a long-term loan.
Yeah.
High interest loan.
Yeah. No, you want all your cash up front. You don't want to.
So people try to time things too perfectly. So in a downturn, in a 6-year downturn, when do you start investing for the other side of that in your mind?
Well, if we're right about 36, you start investing for that rise in 35.
So you wait 80% of the way through.
Yeah. If I capture 80% of any given trend, I am so far ahead of the game. I don't have to capture any more than 80% of the trend. And, one does exceedingly well.
All right, Brian. So the last question I usually ask is sort of about a mistake that you've learned from. I think in this context, it'd be really helpful. What's a prediction that you got wrong that you learned the most from and sort of why?
The year was 1983, which nobody listening is going to remember. But in 1982 and going into 83, we thought the economy was going to continued to do poorly. The early 80s was a very rough time for the U.S. economy. And we were forecasting that it was going to continue to do poorly. Some leading indicators had turned up, and we were rationalizing those leading indicators instead of utilizing those leading indicators to ask ourselves, are we wrong here? Is there something we're not understanding? And 83 came in as an up year, and that was the worst forecasting year that I've been through with ITR in the last 40 years. So what I learned was, and this is what most economists fall prey to, don't rationalize the data, utilize the data, and you'll be that much better off.
That's a very broadly applicable lesson for many of us, particularly with all the data that we have today.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of noise. It's not all data. A lot of it's just noise.
All right, Brian, thank you for joining us. Your insight into the economic trends and their particularly applications is incredibly interesting. I appreciate you sharing some of your forecasts with us.
Robert, it's been my pleasure, and I'll be happy to come on down the road if you want to do it again, because it's been fun.
Well, we're going to book you for 2030 and 2036 too. So we'll get those. We'll get those two in there.
Yeah, okay. You might want to send some Geritol.
Just have a backup, lined up. So, all right, to our listeners, thanks for tuning into the Elevate podcast today. We'll include links to Brian and to ITR on the detailed episode page at robertglaser.com. Thank you again for your support. Until next time, keep elevating. Hello, Elevate Podcast listeners. I wanted to let you know about my friend Darius and his amazing show, The Greatness Machine. The Greatness Machine is one of the top-ranked educational and business podcasts in the country, recently ranking top 5 in the entrepreneurial category on iTunes. Here's why I love Darius and The Greatness Machine. It really comes down to a few things. The Greatness Machine has amazing guests from the likes of sports icon Gabby Reese, worldwide news sensation Amanda Knox, FBI hostage negotiator Chris Voss, and Tiny Habits expert and author BJ Fogg, to NHL Hall of Famer Chris Pronger, and hundreds more. Darius keeps it real. I always learn something new, and I have a few laughs. And he always also asks great questions and is a really entertaining and engaging host. The Greatness Machine is where you get to be a fly on the wall and listen to Darius and his amazing group of guests talk about how they got to where they are today and hear stories of people who have lived their passions to create greatness in the world and doing so despite the odds. So if you want to be entertained while learning from some of the greatest and most accomplished people in the world, this is definitely a show for you to check out. Subscribe to The Greatness Machine today on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.